You know that saying, an eye for an eye? Feels like it's been around forever, right? But get this, I was shocked to find out. It's actually from ancient Israelite law. Like we're talking 3,500 years ago.
Wow.
So today we're going deep into that world, and trust me, it's a lot more complicated and interesting than you might think.
Oh, it definitely is.
Huh.
To help us out, we're going to be looking at a lecture by Dr. Elaine Phillips.
Okay.
It's all about the civil and social side of things in the Torah.
So to even start to understand ancient Israelite justice, we need like the bigger picture, right?
Right.
Dr. Phillips talks about the Code of Hammurabi. It's even older than the Torah. So what can you tell us about that? What's the connection?
Well, Hammurabi's code is basically a window into the legal world of the ancient Near East way back in
Yeah.
the 18th or 17th century BC.
Okay.
What's fascinating is that both Hammurabi's code and the Torah deal with really similar crimes: assault, property damage, kidnapping, all that stuff.
So they're dealing with the same basic problems, but what makes the Torah different?
The punishments, they can be completely different. It's
Yeah.
like they had a totally different idea of what justice meant.
Okay.
For example, in Hammurabi's code, let's say a man hits a pregnant woman and she loses the baby.
Yeah.
His daughter is put to death.
Oh, wow.
The focus is on retaliation, and it often goes way beyond the original crime.
That's intense.
It is.
So where does this whole eye for an eye thing fit in?
That's where it gets really interesting. The Torah is an eye for an eye, which is also called lex talionis, wasn't actually about brutal revenge at all.
Really?
It was a pretty radical idea for its time. It was about limiting punishments so they didn't get out of hand.
So it was a step towards a fairer system.
Exactly. It was about making the punishment fit the crime, preventing things from getting out of control.
That's so different from how we think about an eye for an eye today.
I know, right? To really understand why it was so revolutionary, we have to remember the world they were living in.
Okay.
Blood feuds and cycles of violence were just a normal part of life. The Torah's idea of proportional justice was a way to stop that cycle.
To break the chain.
Yes. It meant that if you hurt someone, you were responsible for the specific harm you caused. But it didn't mean people could just go crazy with revenge.
That makes sense. Okay, so we're starting to see how the Torah is unique, but there's another big difference. God is the ultimate authority in their legal system, right?
That's right. It's a theocracy, not a democracy.
Right.
And God is the ultimate judge and lawmaker. And this had some pretty interesting consequences for how justice worked.
Like what?
Well, for one thing, priests had a much bigger role than you might expect.
Really?
They weren't just religious figures. They were also involved in deciding tough legal cases.
So how did that work? Did they like have a direct line to God or something?
Not exactly a hotline, but they did use these mysterious things called the Urim and Thummim.
Urim and Thummim.
Yeah, they believed these objects were a way to communicate with God. It was like seeking God's guidance in those complicated legal matters.
Wow, that's so different from how we interpret law today. What
Well,
about
that's
prisons? Did they have prisons back then?
no, not prisons the way we think of them,
Yeah.
but they did have cities of refuge.
Cities of refuge.
Yeah, these offered protection to people who had killed someone accidentally.
So, like, if someone caused a death by mistake, maybe during an accident or something?
Exactly. Instead of facing revenge from the victim's family, they could escape to one of these cities. They'd be safe there and go through a trial to determine what really happened.
So it was a way to make sure things didn't escalate and that there was a fair process.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It acknowledged that not every killing was intentional, and it offered a path towards justice that protected people and held them accountable.
Okay, so we're seeing a legal system that is really different from our own, but is trying to grapple with tough issues and create a just society. But I have to admit, some things in the Torah make me uncomfortable.
I understand.
Like slavery, the death penalty, and the lack of equality between men and women. How do we reconcile these things with the Torah's seemingly progressive side?
That's where Dr. Phillips introduces this really helpful concept. She calls it a redemptive movement hermeneutic. It's a way to understand that the Torah's laws are part of a journey towards a more just and fair society.
Okay, break that down for me. What does that actually mean in practice?
Imagine a road with a starting point and a destination.
Okay.
The starting point is the way things were in the ancient Near East, which, as we've seen, could be pretty harsh.
Right.
The destination is that ideal vision of justice that the Torah is aiming for.
So the Torah isn't saying this is perfect, this is how it should be forever. It's more like we're moving in the right direction, even if we're not there yet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And to show us what she means, Dr. Phillips uses some specific examples. Take slavery, for instance. It was a brutal reality in the ancient world, but the Torah introduced rules that you wouldn't find anywhere else.
Like what?
Well, for one thing, it says that owners have to treat their slaves with a certain level of humanity and respect. It also says that eventually slaves have to be set free.
So they were trying to make things less awful within the context of their time.
Yes. It's a step towards recognizing that all people have dignity, even those who are enslaved. And it points toward a future where slavery wouldn't exist.
It's like those ripples Dr. Phillips talked about, the impact of those laws spreading out, even if it took centuries to see the full effect.
Exactly. And this idea of gradual progress applies to other tough parts of the Torah too, like the death penalty.
Okay.
For many people today, that's a punishment that just feels wrong. But in ancient Israel, it was seen as a just consequence for certain crimes.
Yeah, I can see how that's hard to reconcile with our modern ideas, especially because the Torah emphasizes how precious life is.
It is a stark contrast, but we have to try to understand their concept of justice. It was different from ours. They didn't have prisons or other forms of punishment that we might consider more humane.
So the death penalty, as harsh as it seems to us, was just part of their system of holding people accountable.
Right. And Dr. Phillips asks an interesting question. Could it be that in some cases, the quick execution they practiced in ancient Israel was actually considered more merciful than being locked up for a long time or being tortured, which was common in other places?
That's an interesting point. It makes you think about punishment in a different way.
Exactly. And it reminds us to approach these ancient texts with humility. Our own ideas about justice are shaped by our own culture.
That's so true. Okay, so we've talked about slavery and the death penalty, both super complicated issues. What about gender equality, or I guess the lack of it in ancient Israel?
Yeah.
It seems like the Torah puts women in a position where they're less important than men. How does that fit with the Torah's overall message of justice and fairness?
It's important to acknowledge that ancient Israel, like many other ancient societies, was patriarchal. Women didn't have the same rights and opportunities as men.
Right. That's something you definitely notice when you're reading the text today. Dr. Phillips suggests that this was mainly because of how society and the economy worked back then.
That's right. She explains that women often had to rely on men, their fathers, brothers, or husbands to survive. Without that support, they were incredibly vulnerable.
So while that doesn't make the inequalities okay, it helps us understand why they were so deeply rooted in their society.
Exactly. It's about understanding the historical context and seeing how even texts that promote justice can still reflect the limitations of their time.
That's a good point. It reminds us that to really understand these ancient laws, we have to think about the world they were written in.
Absolutely. We can appreciate the steps the Torah makes toward a more just society, but also recognize that its views on gender roles don't match up with our values today.
So we've looked at some of the tough stuff, the things that make us uncomfortable when we read them from a modern perspective. But there's also a lot that's inspiring, right? What are some of the elements of ancient Israelite justice that still speak to us today?
One of the most powerful things is the Torah's focus on taking care of the most vulnerable people, widows, orphans, and foreigners. This idea is woven throughout the entire legal system.
Yes, it comes up over and over again. And it's not just saying be nice. It gives specific instructions for how these people should be protected and taken care of.
You're absolutely right. Think about tithing. A portion of your income had to be set aside for those in need. It was a built-in system of social welfare, making sure everyone had the basics.
It was like they had this safety net built into the system.
Exactly.
And then there's gleaning, where farmers had to leave part of their harvest for the poor to gather. It's like they built compassion right into their farming practices.
It's amazing. And don't forget, the Sabbath year, every seventh year,
Right.
all debts were forgiven and slaves were set free. It was a radical idea in the ancient world, a way to keep wealth and power from being concentrated in the hands of just a few.
It's like a reset button for society, a chance for everyone to get back on their feet.
Exactly. It shows how committed the Torah was to social justice and to creating a society where everyone could thrive.
Speaking of thriving, those cities of refuge we talked about earlier,
Yes.
they seem so unique and ahead of their time. Can you remind us how those worked?
Of course. So these were safe places for people who had accidentally killed someone. They could go to one of these designated cities and avoid being immediately punished by the victim's family.
So it was about preventing people from taking revenge and making sure there was a fair trial.
Exactly. The cities of refuge showed how much the Torah cared about restorative justice. It was about finding ways to address harm without resorting to harsh punishment. It recognized that not all killings were intentional.
It's a reminder that justice doesn't always have to be about revenge. It can also be about compassion, reconciliation, and healing the community.
Absolutely. That's a really important insight. And it's something we can still learn from today as we deal with things like criminal justice reform and restorative justice initiatives.
Okay, so we've really dug deep into this ancient legal system, the good, the bad, and the just plain confusing. What does it all mean for us today? We live in a totally different world.
You're right. That is the big question, isn't it?
Yeah.
We've seen that the Torah's legal system, although it comes from a very different time and place, gives us valuable insights into what justice is, how important it is to protect the vulnerable, and how to work towards a more equal society.
But it also challenges us to think about those difficult questions.
Yes.
How do we reconcile the parts of the Torah that seem progressive with the parts that are more problematic?
Yeah.
How can we apply these ancient ideas to the modern world?
It's a journey, and there are no easy answers. But by thinking about these ancient texts in a careful and critical way, we can learn more about justice and maybe even find inspiration for creating a more just and compassionate world today.
And that brings us back to what Dr. Phillips said at the end of her lecture.
Yeah.
She said the Torah's laws are like a shadow of a perfect justice that's still to come. It's like a glimpse or a hint of something bigger. But what does that perfect justice actually look like? What kind of world is it pointing to?
That's the question that sticks with you, isn't it? If these ancient laws are just a shadow, what does the real thing look like? It makes you want to imagine a world where justice and righteousness are the norm, where the vulnerables are protected, and where everyone is treated with dignity and respect. A world where the idea of shalom is fully realized.
It's a vision worth working towards, even if the path to that perfect justice is long and complicated.
It is, and it requires us to be both humble and brave.
Yeah.
Humble enough to recognize our own limitations and biases, and brave enough to keep pushing for a better world, even when we're not sure of the way.
It's like we're building on what those who came before us did, learning from their struggles and their successes as we continue to work towards a future that's more just and compassionate.
I love that image. And maybe by studying those ancient laws, those shadows of justice, we can better understand the light we're all reaching for.
That's a powerful thought. So as we wrap up our deep dive into ancient Israelite justice, what are some key things for our listeners to take away? What should they be thinking about as they go about their day?
Well, I think the biggest lesson is that we need to be humble and think critically when we approach these ancient texts. We can't just force our modern values and expectations onto a society that worked very differently.
Right. And it's super important to remember that even texts that promote justice can reflect the biases of the culture they came from.
Absolutely. But even with those limitations, the Torah's legal system teaches us so much about justice, the need to protect those who are vulnerable, and how to create a more equal society.
It challenges us to think differently about punishment and rehabilitation, to consider new ways of approaching justice, and to never give up on working towards a world that's more just and compassionate. It's like we're still walking in the shadows, but we're moving toward the light.
That's beautifully said. And as Dr. Phillips reminded us, if the Torah's laws are just a shadow of the perfect justice that's coming, then we have a responsibility to think about what that perfect justice might look like in our own world and time. What can we do individually and together to make that vision a reality?
It's a journey that never ends. It's a call to action to keep working towards a world where everyone is treated with dignity, respect, and fairness. And who knows? You might just find that these ancient ideas about justice inspire you to make a difference in your own little corner of the world.
I agree completely. It's in wrestling with these tough questions and striving for something better that we truly start to live out the kind of justice that the Torah is pointing us towards.
Okay, so we've been talking about this redemptive movement in the Torah's laws. Like, they're moving towards a more just society, even if it isn't always perfect by today's standards.
Right.
But I think it's time to talk about the tough stuff. How do we make sense of some of the more difficult parts of these laws, things that don't fit with our modern ideas of justice?
That's a really important question.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dr. Phillips doesn't shy away from those tough conversations. Mm. She really encourages us to think deeply about the text, even when it makes us uncomfortable.
So let's start with slavery. It's obviously a horrific concept to us now, but it was a reality in so many ancient societies, including ancient Israel. How does the Torah deal with this?
Well, we have to remember that we're talking about a society where slavery was considered normal. It was just part of their world.
Right.
But what's interesting is that even though the Torah doesn't completely abolish slavery, it does introduce some pretty significant protections, things you wouldn't find in other ancient legal codes.
Can you give us an example?
Sure. One big difference is that the Torah requires slave owners to treat their slaves humanely, with a certain level of respect.
Okay.
And also says the slaves have to be set free eventually, which wasn't the case in many other cultures.
So it's like they were trying to make the institution of slavery less brutal given the time period.
Exactly. It's a step towards recognizing the dignity of all people, even those who were enslaved. It's not saying slavery is okay, but it's pointing towards a future where it wouldn't exist.
It's like those ripples Dr. Phillips talked about. The impact of these laws would spread out even if it took centuries to really see the full effect.
Yes, exactly. And this idea of gradual progress applies to other challenging parts of the Torah as well.
Like what?
Well, take the death penalty, for instance. It's a punishment that a lot of people today just find unacceptable.
Yeah.
But in ancient Israel, it was seen as a just punishment for certain crimes.
I can see how that's hard for us to understand today, especially since the Torah talks so much about the sanctity of life.
It is a big contrast. But we have to remember that their understanding of justice was different from ours. They didn't have prisons or other forms of punishment that we might consider more humane today.
So the death penalty, as harsh as it seems to us now, was just part of their system of holding people accountable?
Yeah. And Dr. Phillips brings up an interesting point.
Oh, what's that?
She asks, could it be that in some cases, the way they executed people quickly in ancient Israel was actually seen as more merciful than keeping someone locked up for a long time or torturing them, which happened a lot in other societies back then?
That's a really interesting question. It makes you rethink what it means to punish someone and what a just response to a crime should look like.
Exactly. And it reminds us that we need to be careful about judging these ancient texts based on our own ideas about justice.
Okay, so we've talked about slavery and the death penalty, both incredibly complicated issues. What about the treatment of women in ancient Israelite society? The Torah doesn't seem to treat men and women equally.
Right.
It seems like women are seen as less important than men. How can we reconcile that with the Torah's broader message of justice and fairness?
We can't ignore the fact that ancient Israel, like many ancient societies, was patriarchal. Women's roles and rights were definitely limited compared to men's.
Right. That's something that stands out when you're reading the text today. Dr. Phillips suggests that this was mostly due to the social and economic realities of the time.
Right. She explains that women often relied on men, their fathers, their brothers, or their husbands for protection and provision.
To survive.
Exactly. Without that support, they were extremely vulnerable in that society.
So while that doesn't justify the inequalities, it helps us understand why they were so ingrained in their culture.
I think so. It's about recognizing the historical context and understanding that even texts that promote justice can still reflect the biases of their time.
That's a good point. It reminds us that interpreting these ancient laws isn't always straightforward. We have to consider the world they were written in.
Exactly. We can appreciate the progress that the Torah makes toward a more just society while also recognizing that its views on gender roles don't align with our values today.
So we've talked about some of the difficult parts of the Torah, things that can make us uncomfortable when we read them from a modern perspective.
Yes.
But there's also a lot that's inspiring in these laws. What are some of the things about ancient Israelite justice that still resonate with us today?
One of the most striking things is how much the Torah emphasizes caring for the most vulnerable people in society, widows, orphans, foreigners. It's a theme that runs through the entire legal system.
It really does. It comes up again and again. And it's not just empty words. The Torah gives specific instructions for how these people should be protected and cared for.
Absolutely. Think about tithing, for example. A portion of your income was supposed to be set aside for the poor and needy. It was a built-in system of social welfare, a way to make sure everyone had what they needed to survive.
It was like a safety net woven right into their society.
Yes. And then there's gleaning, where farmers were told to leave some of their crops behind for the poor to gather. It was like a built-in act of compassion right there in their agricultural practices.
Right. And let's not forget the Sabbath year every seventh year.
Yes, that was huge.
All debts were supposed to be forgiven and slaves were set free. That's a pretty radical idea for the ancient world.
It really was. It was a way to prevent the concentration of wealth and power in the hands of just a few people.
It's like a reset button for society, a way to give everyone a fresh start.
Exactly. It's a powerful example of the Torah's commitment to social justice and its vision of a society where everyone could flourish.
Speaking of flourishing, what about those cities of refuge we talked about earlier?
Yes.
They seem like such a unique and forward-thinking concept. Can you remind us how they worked?
Sure. So remember, these were safe places for people who had accidentally killed someone. They could run to one of these cities and avoid being immediately punished by the victim's family.
So it was about preventing acts of revenge and making sure there was a fair trial.
Exactly. The cities of refuge really show how much the Torah cared about restorative justice. It was about finding ways to deal with harm without resorting to harsh punishment and recognizing that not all killings were intentional.
It reminds us that justice doesn't always have to be about punishing people. Sometimes it's about compassion, reconciliation, and finding ways to heal the community.
That's a really important point. And it's something that's still relevant today as we try to figure out better ways to deal with crime and how to make justice more restorative.
Okay, so we've explored this ancient legal system, the good, the bad, and the parts that are hard to understand. What does it all mean for us today? We live in such a different world.
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
It is.
We've seen that even though the Torah's legal system comes from a very different time and place, it can still teach us important things about justice, the importance of taking care of vulnerable people, and how to build a more just and fair society.
But it also makes us think about those hard questions.
Definitely.
Like, how do we reconcile the parts of the Torah that seem progressive with the parts that seem problematic? And how do we apply these ancient ideas to our modern world?
It's a process, and there are no easy answers. But by engaging with these ancient texts thoughtfully and critically, we can learn more about justice and maybe even find inspiration for how to create a more just and compassionate world today.
And that brings us back to Dr. Philippe's final point. She said that the Torah's laws are like a shadow of a perfect justice that's still to come. It's like we're seeing a glimpse, a hint of something bigger. But what does that perfect justice actually look like? What kind of world is it pointing to?
That's the question that really stays with you, right? If these ancient laws are just a shadow, what does the real substance of justice look like? It makes you want to imagine a world where justice and righteousness are just the way things are, where vulnerable people are protected and everyone is treated with dignity and respect, a world where the idea of shalom is fully realized.
It's a vision worth working towards, even if the path to that perfect justice is long and winding.
It is, and it requires us to be both humble and courageous. Humble enough to recognize our own limitations and biases, and courageous enough to keep pushing for a better world, even when we're not sure how to get there.
It's like we're standing on the shoulders of those who came before us, learning from their mistakes and their successes as we continue to work towards a more just and compassionate future.
I love that image. And maybe by studying these ancient laws, these shadows of justice, we can get a better sense of the light we're all reaching for.
That's a powerful thought. So as we wrap up this part of our deep dive into ancient Israelite justice, what are some of the key things you hope our listeners will take away from this conversation?
Well, I think the most important lesson is that we need to be humble and think critically when we approach these ancient texts. We can't just impose our modern values and expectations on a society that operated so differently from our own.
Right. It's so important to remember that even texts that promote justice can still reflect the biases of the culture they came from.
Absolutely. But even with those limitations, the Torah's legal system gives us so much to think about. It teaches us about justice, about the importance of protecting those who are most vulnerable, and about how to build a more equal society.
It challenges us to rethink our ideas about punishment and how we rehabilitate people. It encourages us to explore different approaches to justice and to never give up on creating a world that's more just and more compassionate. It's like we're still walking in the shadows, but we're moving towards the light.
I love how you put that. And as Dr. Philippe reminded us, if the Torah's laws are just a shadow of the perfect justice that's coming, then we have a responsibility to think about what that perfect justice might look like in our own world. What can we do, both individually and collectively, to make that vision a reality?
It's a journey that we're all on together. Every step we take, every conversation we have, every act of compassion we offer brings us a little closer to that light.
Absolutely. It's in wrestling with these difficult questions and striving for something better,
yeah,
that we truly embody the spirit of justice that the Torah points towards.
Okay, so before we were talking about the Urim and Thummim.
Right, those mysterious objects that the high priest used in ancient Israel.
It's kind of wild to think about it. Like, the high priest is standing there in front of the Ark of the Covenant using these things to figure out what God wants them to do in legal cases.
It really shows you how different their justice system was from anything we have today.
Totally. But what I don't get is, how do they actually work? Did they, like, glow or something, or whisper secrets? What's the deal?
That's the funny thing. The Old Testament doesn't really tell us much about the details. We don't have a clear description of what they looked like or exactly how they were used.
So it's like a historical mystery.
It is. Some scholars think they might have been some kind of sacred lot, maybe stones or tablets with writing on them, that they would cast or draw to determine God's will.
Like a divine crane flip.
Sort of. But even exactly what they did with them is debated. Did they just give a yes or no answer? Or was it more complicated than that? We're not really sure.
It's like trying to crack a secret code. But even without knowing all the details, the whole idea is so fascinating. It really shows how important faith was in their legal system.
Absolutely. The Urim and Thummim show that they believed God was involved in everything that happened in their nation, even legal matters. It wasn't just about following rules. It was about seeking God's wisdom and guidance.
And that makes me think about the bigger picture we've been talking about, this idea that the Torah's laws are just a shadow of a perfect justice that's still to come. If the Urim and Thummim represent this direct connection to God's will, does that tell us anything about what that perfect justice might look like?
That's a really deep question. Maybe it suggests that perfect justice is all about being in line with God's will. A situation where human laws and decisions perfectly reflect God's wisdom and compassion.
That's an amazing thought. But it makes you wonder, right? How can we as humans ever hope to achieve that? We're not perfect.
That's the challenge, isn't it? But maybe that's the whole point of the shadow analogy. We're always striving, always reaching for that perfect justice, even if we never fully get there in this life.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into this ancient legal system, what are some of the key things you hope our listeners will take away? What should they be thinking about as they go about their day?
I think the most important thing to remember is that justice is a journey, not a destination. It's a process of constantly learning, evolving, and striving for something better.
And that process involves asking tough questions, wrestling with ancient texts, and recognizing how history and culture shape our understanding of things.
Exactly. We need to be humble and realize that our own understanding of justice is influenced by our own time and place.
But even with all that complexity, the Torah's legal system has so much to teach us. It reminds us about the importance of protecting those in need, the value of fairness and equality, and the inherent dignity of every human being. These are principles that still matter today.
They really do. And maybe by studying these ancient laws, these shadows of justice, we can better understand the light we're all reaching for, both as individuals and as a society.
So to our listeners, I want to encourage you to keep exploring, keep asking questions, and keep striving for a world that's more just and more compassionate. And who knows, maybe these ancient ideas about justice will inspire you to make a difference in your own part of the world.
I love that. And remember, the pursuit of justice is something we do together. Every step we take, every conversation we have, every act of compassion brings us closer to that light.
Well said. And on that note, we'll wrap up our deep dive into ancient Israelite justice. Until next time, keep learning, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.